This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films American Made, Flatliners, which isn't really a new film, it's a remake, Till Death Do Us Part, which isn't really a new film, it's kind of a remake of another Julia Roberts movie, Battle of the Sexes, Woodshock, literally right before Aaron, and Gerald's Game. And I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and the home cinema roundup featuring Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Yeah, I know I can talk about Avatar news that apparently they started production on 4 sequels this week, but I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe it when we actually get a real release date. They say it's coming in like 2020, but I do have to do a little bit of a rest in peace to Hugh Hefner. He was a legend. He was a legend in publishing, and not just because of the nudie pics and the Playboy lifestyle. And yeah, he sort of helped define the sexual revolution, and he had ups and downs in his career, and he had a resurgence in his career with The Girls Next Door, that show on E! Where he had the three girlfriends living in the mansion with him. But just as a publishing guy, people think of Playboy as, oh, you're looking at dirty pictures. And I remember saying this back when it was published back in the 80s and 90s, I'm like, look, if you're paying good money for Playboy just to see nudie pictures, you're wasting your money. Because there were other magazines out there that were far more graphic and had and more extreme nudity as well. I mean, you can go to the bookstore and get a Hustler magazine, which had like sex and nudity on like 98% of the pages. Why would you bother to buy Playboy for nude pictures unless it's a very specific person you want to see? Ultimately, he was a publishing god because Playboy was very prestigious to be published in. I remember I when I was publishing stories, I was trying to get into, I never cracked the nut to get into Playboy, but I'd get like little notes from the editors, which was a big deal. But it like, they paid 10 times what any other publication would pay for stories. They always had in-depth interviews. They had deep dives into political information. It was not just a girly mag. And that was because of the standards that Hugh Hefner had for his publication that rose it above the other girly mags of the day. Hugh Hefner, he was 91. That's a good run. The next news I want to talk about isn't really news as much as it is sort of a general trend. And I found this out when I was trying to watch the new Star Trek. It was on CBS. And for some reason, my local AT&T U-verse provider is having a row with the local CBS affiliate, and they're not carrying the network on our system, so I can't watch CBS. Now, I could go to All Access and pay $6 a month for commercials when it's free, and I could just pull it out of the air, but you can't hook that up to a DVR. And all this is doing is making me just say, okay, I'm not going to watch it then. I'm not going to track down Star Trek. I can always wait for the DVDs and get them for free at the library if I really wanted to. It's not that important to me. And they're really trying to push CBS All Access. And that's the thing I think that's really behind this. And this is the general trend. You're seeing CBS is pushing for Star Trek to go almost exclusively on CBS All Access. I think that's actually where they want it to go, where you got to pay a $10 subscription, I think, for no ads. And I just read that 30 Rock's coming off of Netflix and it's going to Hulu, which I believe is affiliated or owned by Universal, which is all NBC. And of course, we have all the news that Disney is having its own streaming network, and that's why the Star Wars and the Marvel movies are being pulled off of Netflix. And what's happening here is very distressing from a consumer standpoint, because suddenly all the different shows and movies that you want to see are being spread out and separated, which is fine, except nobody's going to want to pay $5 to $10 a month for CBS All Access and Hulu and Disney and Netflix and Amazon and HBO Go and all these different networks, and you're going to end up spending $1,500 a year on this stuff, which is ludicrous. But right now, everybody wants their own piece of the pie. But I think that's going to be a bad thing for consumers. What consumers want is they want one place to go to where you consolidate this stuff. And you can just pay a subscription. I don't care if it's $50 a month. People would pay $50 a month if they could get anything they wanted to on demand and have some sort of control over the commercial, so you're not playing the same goddamn commercial 5 times in a row over the course of a half hour. So I think that's where we're going. I think eventually what's going to happen is we're going to see a subscription service, maybe something like through Amazon or even through Netflix, where you can consolidate the entertainment, and then they pay royalties to the different people. Right now, it's all getting separated, and it's going to be a mess. And all that's going to do is cause people to either stop watching this stuff or, more likely, pirating to go way up. Because pirating, it used to be you had to have a certain level of savvy. You at least had to know what BitTorrent sites to go to and where you could safely download to avoid viruses. You kind of had to figure out how to do it. Now people buy on like just eBay these jailbroken Amazon Fire Sticks that they're technically illegal to use for pirating, but they use them for streaming. And I know people who have those and they're just like, oh yeah, I use them all the time. It's become very, very easy, and it's only going to get easier to pirate stuff. And all that's going to do is cause people to not spend money on your individual things. And they're just going to pirate everything. And this is a business practice where the studios and the content owners are getting overly greedy and wanting to separate their stuff out. And all it's going to do is drive people either away from their content or to a piracy platform. Mark my words, that's going to be coming on the horizon, and it's their own darn fault for doing it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. First one I want to talk about is The Maze Runner, The Death Cure. This opens on January 26th.
3 years we spent behind walls trying to break out, and now we want to break back in. Alright, get shotgun.
You can't save everyone, Thomas.
I can try.
When the hell does it stop?
It stops when we find a cure.
There is no cure!
This is an interesting franchise because the first one kind of came on strong. It wasn't a huge hit. It wasn't at the level of The Hunger Games. It wasn't even at the level of Divergent, which kind of fizzled and fell apart before they could even finish the series. But The Maze Runner started out with kind of this surprise performance in a September frame, and they said, oh, this might be the next young adult movie, because you know, you had Harry Potter, then you had Twilight, then you had Hunger Games, and they're waiting for the next one. And it wasn't Divergent, they thought it would be Maze Runner. Well, then the second Maze Runner didn't do as well. And I wasn't a huge fan of these movies, but the thing is, this one looks like it's trying to finish this up, but it's seriously looking like it's trying to do Mad Max. The trailer makes it look like they're trying to make the teen version of Mad Max. I don't know if that's what the movie's like, but it shows that they're certainly trying to steer away from the Hunger Games Divergent angle that the show had already, and they're going for the more road action movie. I don't know, maybe it'll at least be interesting to watch. I thought the second one was terrible, and the first one was just meh. The next one I want to talk about is Peter Rabbit. Opens February 9th.
Once upon a time, in a beautiful wood, there lived a rabbit named Peter with a blue jacket.
Sorry!
And no pants.
Come on in! We've got the garden!
Help yourself to anything.
Wait, didn't you try to eat me? It was you! I knew it! How are you? So good to see you.
This is so depressing because I remember reading some of the Beatrix Potter books when I was a kid. I don't remember much about them, but I'm pretty sure she wasn't making jokes about the rabbit not wearing pants. It looks like that Sony, who's producing this, has learned nothing from the Smurfs. They've learned nothing from saying, hey, let's preserve some sort of integrity to the original source material. And this is just going to be like fart jokes and goofy humor. I don't remember modern rock music being in the Beatrix Potter stories. I don't remember this kind of thing. It was always this sort of charming. It'd be like making the Velveteen Rabbit and have it turn into Ren and Stimpy. That's not what this was. And this just looks like it's trying to be what Hop was. If you remember Hop from the Easter Bunny movie that came out about 5-10 years ago. that's, I think, what they're trying to do here. I don't know. I'm not looking for it. Plus, it's February. This may not be very good at all. And that is it for this segment. That's depressing. Let's plow ahead in the movie reviews in the next segment with American Made, Flatliners, and Till Death Do Us Part. Because we can, can! Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The first film I want to be talking about is American Made. Tom Cruise plays a man paid by the CIA to become one of the biggest drug runners in America.
Top of your class in the Civil Air Patrol, a pilot like you shouldn't be flying buses. You should be serving your country.
Your CIA.
Shh. We need you to deliver stuff for us.
Oh, this is legal?
If you're doing it for the good guys.
You are an airline pilot, Barry. That's how you support this family.
This is gonna be good for us.
Is this all legal?
You trust me?
No!
First of all, this movie is fine. I mean, it's competently made. It's well shot. The actors all kind of fit the roles. Aside from the fact that Tom Cruise's wife was once again like 20 years younger than him, but who cares? That's how Hollywood does it. And I mean, it's directed fine, but there's no oomph to it. Doug Liman is a real punchy director. I remember movies like Go, or the first Bourne movie, or he did Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which was a great, fun pop movie. This one sort of feels like it was just sort of directed from an easy chair. I also feel like I've seen this movie about a dozen times. And I'm not just talking about in my life. I'm talking about in the last year or two. This feels like we're treading very familiar territory because, you know, it reminds me a little bit of what was that movie, The Infiltrator, with Bryan Cranston last year, I think that was. And then maybe 2 years ago, there was that one with Jeremy Renner that was also dealing with the Iran-Contra. He was, of course, the reporter that blew it open. And we've seen these movies of so-and-so does the crimes that the U.S. set him up. I mean, it just feels like we've been down this path a dozen times. And while it's competently put together, there's nothing really special. There's nothing remarkable about the movie. There's nothing bad about the movie. But it's just unremarkable. I mean, you know where it's going. Even if you weren't alive in the 80s or were aware of what was going on in the 80s, and as confusing as that whole Colombia, Nicaragua, Contra, Sandinista, all that stuff, as confusing as that could be to the layman, you kind of just see where this is all going. And it follows that same pattern of, oh, here he goes. He's not happy in his job. He gets this option to do this. Then he starts getting his feet wet. Then he starts making it into a business. Then they start making all this money and they start partying with the drug dealers and then things go bad. It just follows an incredibly predictable storyline. Even though it's a real story, it just, there's nothing new about it. And that's kind of my biggest complaint about the movie. I mean, otherwise it's a well done movie. It's competently made. I mean, the people involved in it are fine. Although it's funny. I mean, the whole thing is this guy becomes a drug runner for the U.S. And part of it is he's doing stuff that he shouldn't and he's kind of playing the game, but he's making a lot of money. And they kind of play his wife off as, you know, partly a victim because she's just the wife and she has no control over this. But she's down there partying with Pablo Escobar. I mean, come on. She's not completely innocent in this. I mean, she knows where the money's coming from. She's not stupid. And she certainly looked the other way. Now, you can sit there and say the kids were victims in this because they're just along for the ride. You know, when you're five and your dad's a drug runner, there's not a whole lot you can do. That's what's so frustrating about this film. There's nothing I can point to that say this is a problem, and it moves. It doesn't really drag that much. It just feels like about a dozen other movies I've seen. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks, but it rocks on remote.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Flatliners. A group of students try to revive each other after pushing the limits of death.
What happens to us after we die?
The only way to find out is to see for ourselves.
We could document that experience.
I'm going next.
Charging 200.
It's a good day to die.
Clear.
Was it all fun? Was there anything disturbing? Something is happening to us. I think I'm going crazy.
Maybe we opened a door.
Now, first of all those people out there on the internet who are bad-mouthing Joel Schumacher, stop it. Joel Schumacher has made some terrible movies in his time. Early in his career with stuff like DC Cab and The Incredible Shrinking Woman, and later in his career like Batman and Robin. But doggone it, Flatliners, the original, is a national treasure. That is a good movie. I recently revisited it, and yeah, it does sort of drip in the Joel Schumacher late 80s excessiveness. I mean, it really feels like a 1-2 punch of The Lost Boys and then Flatliners. But it's a completely serviceable movie. It's actually one of his best films. And it has a great cast, and I mean, it sort of like hit that cast right at the right time. Julia Roberts was just becoming huge. Kiefer Sutherland was the same thing. Kevin Bacon had been around for a while, but he was a big name. Oliver Platt, we'll let the fat guy be in there too. But it was a good movie. And then they're remaking it. Spoiler alert. They didn't screen it for anybody. What makes it worse, they didn't even have Thursday night previews. You couldn't go pay to see this movie if you wanted to before Friday morning at their first show. And that tells you something. This movie has got to suck. It's not like technology has gotten better. I mean, yeah, the special effects for doing it, but that's also part of the charm of the original movie is it was before digital effects really took over. So all of the effects were practical and in camera, and it looks gorgeous, and it's a lavish movie. This one just looks like a throwaway. And while I love movies about people in a lab or doing science trying to make the world a better place and having to go horribly awry, this one just looks poorly done. So yeah, this one gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Till Death Do Us Part. A woman discovers her husband is an abuser, then fakes her own death to escape him. So it's basically a remake of Sleeping with the Enemy.
I don't want to have children right now. And you keep pushing it. I just want my wife all to myself. Death Do Us Part. Remember? Why did you lie to me, Madison?
It's all in the past.
Daddy's here.
I feel like a racist calling it this, but this is kind of what it's kind of been pigeonholed as, sort of like that urban domestic thriller. Movies like No Good Deed or the Perfect Man, I think that was one that they had, where it's like it's an all black cast, and you know, it kind of feels like it's cut from the Lifetime original movie cloth. Once again, this wasn't screened. No big surprise. I mean, I guess this looks like it's going to be just as serviceable as any of these other quote urban domestic thrillers. I do think it's intellectually dishonest to make this movie where because I don't believe that this happens where it's like, he was such a nice guy and then he turned out to be abusive. No, there are signs. I'm sorry. And that's not to diminish domestic violence and diminish the victims of domestic violence, but somebody doesn't just become abusive in, like right after marriage. There are signs. It's just, a lot of people will, and this goes both ways, man or woman, a lot of people just ignore those signs, or it sort of like plays into their cool allure. But then when you kind of go into normalcy of a relationship, and that's what marriage is, all the excitement and sexiness is taken out of marriage because you see each other at your best and your worst. And so it becomes somewhat common. The idea of, he suddenly changed when we got married. I don't quite buy that. I mean, that doesn't mean you don't get my sympathy, but I think that's a cheap trick to do in a movie because I don't believe that that's how things work. I think people get in abusive relationships and they don't recognize it themselves as abusive until the newness of the relationship or the sexiness of the relationship wears off. I don't know. I'm going to the weeds here. I'm going to get in trouble here. And now the feminists are going to be mad at me. What's new? Anyways, this one sucks.
It sucks.
That is it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about two other movies I actually did see, Battle of the Sexes and Woodshop.
Stop it now.
Take a
a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse, Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue with the movie reviews. I only did one movie review because two of them they didn't show. They didn't have the balls to show me. That is a sign a movie's not good. If they're not showing it to critics, it's not a good movie. And then if they don't have screenings on Thursday night, it's really gotta suck. I'm sorry, that's just how the business works nowadays. And I'm sorry, studios, you can't control the narrative. You can't stop people from seeing a movie once it's released. I've literally had studios tell me that they would prefer us to hold our reviews until Saturday for a movie that they didn't screen and I could go see at 10 in the morning on a Friday. No, I'm not. Of course, by the time 10 in the morning comes around on Friday, I have no interest in seeing a crappy movie that's going to suck anyways. But let's talk about a movie that actually doesn't suck. The Battle of the Sexes. This biopic looks at the lives of Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs leading up to their legendary tennis match.
Hello?
Eureka, Billie Jean!
It's Bobby Riggs. I had a great idea. Male chauvinist pig versus hairy-legged feminist.
You're still a feminist, right?
I'm a tennis player who happens to be a woman.
Don't hang up.
By the way, I shaved my legs.
Billie Jean King, already a champion of women's rights, is now the most successful female player of all time.
I am not saying that women don't belong on the court. Who would pick up the balls otherwise?
Oh, my God. There's not a single thing I don't hate about Bobby Riggs.
I won the triple of Wimbledon. I could beat Billie Jean King.
I was born in 1971, so I was really too young to be aware of what was going on in tennis. And plus, it's tennis. I don't care about tennis. But I didn't know what was going on at the time. And even when this thing happened in 1974, I was three. So I wasn't exactly reading the New York Times, smoking a pipe and trying to do my stock investing and looking at what's going on in the culture of America. I was worried about the Newsu Review or something like that. Anyways, this film is one of the many films that we've had, kind of like American Made, where it throws back to another era. The American Maid was in the late 70s and into the 80s. This is the early 70s. And what's I find fascinating about this movie is there's nothing untrue in the presentation of America in this movie. I mean, I'm sure there's liberties taken here and there, but they really did have wind-up TVs at airports, and you really could smoke on planes, and you really did have Bobby Riggs out there. I even remember growing up when I was very young, Bobby Riggs was still out there. You'd be like a carnival barker. I mean, he was a showman. He was a crazy man. And I remember him, and I remember the wake of this, and I remember Billie Jean King throughout the 70s and how this affected her career and how it affected the profile of tennis. So it is something that happened in our society, and the backdrop on which it happened during feminism, the height of feminism, the sexual revolution, and women's lib. It seems absurd looking back at it now that women had to fight for some of the garbage that they had to go through, which is kind of we take for granted now. But this is a great reminder that this took place, what, 43 years ago? It's not that long. So the movie isn't really about as much about the tennis match as it is about Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs. They don't even like really cross paths. They bump into each other once or twice, but they don't really cross paths until like the third act. And in fact, the first two thirds of the movie is the bulk of it is kind of a Billie Jean King biopic. It was sort of like just sliced out of this life in the early 70s. And then one of the big focuses on there is her coming to terms with her sexuality, which again, you look at this movie and you don't realize lesbianism was so taboo back in the 70s. And I mean, it was, and it was a sideline, and homosexuality as a whole was dismissed. And if you were out and publicly out, you were a stereotype. And yeah, they had people on TV who were gay, but it was somebody like on that Barney Miller, they had the gay guy on Barney Miller, or it was like Jack Tripper on Three's Company pretending to be gay. And it really was offensive if you look at it in a modern cultural context. But it was interesting to sort of see this happen. And I'm not a Billie Jean King historian, so I'm not a biographer, so I don't know how accurate this is. And I'm sure there's a lot of liberties and stories kind of mushed together and some timelines that are made to work with the film. But it shows the struggle that she had to face. Just the pressure to marry if you were a lesbian. Because she was married. I think this is an interesting look into it. So it does get a little bit serious about, but when it's most serious, it's about that and how that impacted her feminist agenda, which she did have. And I think if you asked her today, she'd be like, absolutely, she had a feminist agenda. There's nothing wrong with that. You can have that. What it also does is in a much lesser degree, it doesn't focus on Bobby Riggs, but it does give him screen time and it does give you a chance to get to know him as a character. And one of the things that the movie doesn't do, which I loved, is they don't vilify him, because no one's a villain in their own mind. And Bobby Riggs really wasn't a villain. He was like a professional wrestling villain. He was doing it for the showmanship, and he was doing stuff that would seem very chauvinistic and degrading and debasing, but it was all kind of done for the show and the promotion of his stuff that he was doing. And they really showed him as a real guy back at home with his wife and his kid and his other kid that he had to go to help him with this whole tennis promotion. It showed him trying to capture his career again and showed him as a very sympathetic character at times, which I loved. And Steve Carell was a great person for that, because while he can play the crazy, you're going to be a hairy leg feminist, he was also very affable and likable and relatable. When it finally gets to the battle of the sexes, you know, I'm not going to spoil it. I actually had a radio host who was interviewing me about this spoil it. I'm like, hey, the spoiler alert. He goes, well, it's history. I'm like, yeah, but it was like 43 years ago, so let's not, you know, tell everything that happens. This is the ending of the movie. But that's very interesting, and that's all true. I do remember always seeing clips of this. It is not exaggerated. And it's ultimately a fun movie. It gets a little heavy at times with Billie Jean King's life, but overall it's kind of a whimsical, fun, charming little movie. And I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Woodshock. Kirsten Dunst plays a grieving woman who struggles with her own emotions and dangerous substance abuse.
Are you sure you want to do this?
No, it's Teresa.
You ever regret it? Cutting everything down?
What did you do, Teresa? What did you do?
Oh my God. The trailer nearly put me to sleep. If the trailer nearly puts me to sleep, can you imagine how tough it is to watch this 90-minute movie? Oh my God, this film, it's the first film by, I think they're sisters who made the movie, and it reeks of first-time filmmaking, and it reeks of somebody trying to be artistic. It is a lot of longing shots and symbolic trees and wind blowing, but not done with any sort of finesse or subtlety. It's sort of like if Terrence Malick made a movie about a woman moping at home and doing drugs. That is basically what this film is. I'm sure there's a lot of thought and care. And I mean, the cinematography is interesting, but there is no story here whatsoever. There is maybe about 5 minutes of story, if that. And then the characters, I don't even know what their relationships are. I mean, there was a point I was talking to another critic in town who had seen it, or she was actually halfway through watching it because it was a screener. And she was just like, oh, I got a half hour to finish. I'm like, oh, that's a tough run. But I said to her, I go, when you get halfway through a movie and you don't know the characters' names, that's not a good sign. And moreover, if you don't even know who's in a relationship with who, I still can't figure out who Kirsten Dunst was married to, her character. And if she was having an affair with somebody, and then there's a third guy, and then there's these two guys who kind of look the same. One kind of just looks like the other one shaved. I mean, it's, and this other critic in town, she was agreeing with me. She's like, yeah, this movie is at times incoherent. It is so boring. It is not the kind of movie that has any sort of mainstream appeal. And I'm not even talking about something like The Witch, which A24 put that out and put this out. The Witch, at least, had a certain appeal to it in a historical context and in a horror movie context. And while it was not mainstream, it was a really neat movie. This movie's just, it's literally just for the art house crowd. It's boring. Blech. So it totally sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about literally right before Aaron, Gerald's Game, the weekly box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Shake that.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. At the movies, continuing on with Kevin Carr. Let's continue with the movie reviews with literally right before Aaron. A man who hasn't gotten over his ex is invited to her wedding and suffers a breakdown.
I'm getting married. I don't want you to hate me.
I don't hate you.
Will you come to my wedding?
Yeah, I'd like to be there.
It's real easy. Don't go. Just don't go.
You guys were inseparable. Do you remember that?
Well, that's a long time ago.
A year and a half.
You have to jog my memory.
We're having this dinner party tonight. Maybe you want to come?
Adam and Allison used to go out.
When was that?
Literally right before Aaron.
I used to make films. I've talked about this on the show before. I've done films. I've gone to film festivals. I've done meetings in Hollywood and that sort of thing. Never really had anything click. But yes, the cliche is true that reviewers are nothing more than failed filmmakers. But when I started doing films and even just writing screenplays, I always ran into somebody who's like, I got a screenplay I want you to read, or can you look at my film? I swear to God, half the screenplays or more, or half the films I watched were about some mamsy-pamsy guy who could not get over his ex-girlfriend. And I got so tired of seeing those that I just refused to watch anybody's films. Of course, now I went to be a film critic and now I got to watch them all the time. Occasionally you get something that's like maybe uniquely approached, like 500 Days of Summer, but 500 Days of Summer is nothing more than some mamsy-pamsy guy who can't get over an ex-girlfriend. I'm so tired of these movies of guys just going, oh, yeah, you broke up with me. Oh, no, I don't know what to do. And what makes it worse is usually it's bad enough when it's a guy in their 20s. Justin Long plays the main character. He's like 38. He should be halfway to grandchildren by now. There is no reason to be 38 years old acting like this. Even Colby Smulders, who plays his ex who's getting married, she's like in her early 30s. This is not behavior of a 30, and maybe it is, but guys, man up, and women man up too. I don't care who you are. Stop moping about failed relationships. And I've seen this a billion times. It has all of the cliches to it. He can't get over her, and he tries to reconnect with her, and it goes to the wedding. But the biggest problem with this movie isn't just that it's a cliche that I've seen a billion times before. He is an a-hole. There is literally nothing this character does in any part of this movie that is decent human behavior. He is either moping and feeling sorry for himself, or he's actively being an a-hole to other people. In fact, they flash back to their meet cute and their meet cute in this library in college. And he goes up to her and he tells her the ending of a book she's reading. And this whole reason, he's like, well, it's Of Mice and Men. You should know. You should have read it by now. I want to have sex with you. That was his pickup line. I mean, like, that guy's a jerk. Even in the trailer, oh, the trailer opens up with him with his current girlfriend, who's a knockout. And he's like, oh, we should get married. No, we should break up. I mean, he's such an awful person. And what he ends up doing when he gets to the wedding, and that's the other thing we've seen, how many movies of some damaged individual going to a wedding and causing a problem. There have been ones named after Margot at the Wedding. And then there was that one. There was one with Nicole Kidman, and there was one with Anne Hathaway that were basically saying somebody just coming in and being a force of chaos. I'm so tired of these. Oh my gosh, grow some balls, filmmakers, and make a movie that actually doesn't involve your character turning into a ball of jelly weeping in his own genitals. Literally right before Aaron sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Gerald's Game. In this Netflix original movie, Carla Gugino plays a woman who finds herself handcuffed to a bed in a remote cabin after her husband dies of a heart attack.
It's time to wake up, honey.
5 hours you've wasted screaming for neighbors that are half a mile away, if they're even here yet.
How long do you think someone lives without water?
You can pull till your wrists break. You're not getting out of those cuffs.
You're not real. You're not real.
This is based on a Stephen King book, and this is one of the books I actually point to as a fan of Stephen King. I say this is the book where he started to change, and it actually was when he was writing it, that's when he was like getting on the wagon. He was kicking the alcoholism, and not kicking it, but recovering from it, and he has this relapse into like drug addiction because of the oxycodone when he got hit by a van, and that ended up giving us Dreamcatcher. In my opinion, Stephen King was the best when he was fighting his own demons, It's great that he got past all this personally, but it's his writing kind of suffered, which is kind of a shame. But ultimately, Gerald's Game was one of his last really well done books, and it was a short book, and it was a pairing with Dolores Claiborne, which they made like 20 years ago into a movie, and they're finally making it on Netflix, and it's directed by like Mike Flanagan, who did Hush and Oculus. Who I once complained about one of his earlier movies. I forget what it was, but he yelled at me on Twitter because I complained about his movie. But I think the guy's a talented filmmaker. And this is a well-done movie. This is very good adaptation. It's we're in the month of good adaptations of Stephen King's work. And this one, it's on Netflix now. It just hit midnight on Friday. So you can go to Netflix and watch it now. And I got a chance to see it early. It played at Fantastic Fest. Not that I was there to see it, but it's a good movie. It's Carla Gugino's great. Bruce Greenwood's great. And part of it, if you've read the book, it's most of the books are chained to the bed because she's trapped and she's having to, you know, cause how is she going to escape? Cause she could just starve to death or die of thirst. And so much happens in her head that they do a good job bringing that out of her head and not making it about a woman just sort of staring at a wall while she's chained to a bed for an hour and a half. But it's a good movie and it's a good adaptation and it's creepy and it does kind of fall into that, what would you do if this happened to you? So yeah, one of the better Stephen King adaptations. It's on Netflix now. Gerald's Game rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Real quick, let's just talk about the box office. Kingsman did well last week. It was did not do as well as some people were predicting. I mean, I saw people predicting 45, 50 million for this. And I'm like, I don't think it will. It did well enough to warrant its sequelness. It made a little bit more than the original with 39 million. The Lego Ninjago movie actually came in lower with 20. I said both of those will underperform to the expectations. I was totally right with that. Friend Request made just 2 million, which was not impressive at all. It is still sort of like a juggernaut out there, and it's what, third weekend it did almost 30 million. That's impressive for a horror movie or anything released in September. This week, I think Kingsman is probably going to repeat with about 20 million, maybe a little bit less. And American Made, I think, is going to be fighting for second place with It. It's good for 15 million. We'll just see how much of an audience Tom Cruise can bring. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week's release is actually not on DVD yet. It actually comes out next week, so you have until Tuesday. But I wanted to give it a little bit of a preview, and it's also available on demand right now. Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, Will Turner's son teams up with Jack Sparrow to find an artifact that will break the curse on his father.
The dead have taken command of the sea. We're searching for Pearl, a girl, and a sparrow.
I have heard stories of a mighty Spanish captain whose son had been killed. Thousands of men.
No. Pirates.
I once knew a Spaniard named something in Spanish.
He's coming for you, Jack.
I like the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. In fact, I like these last two. These last two have been a little more pop and have been a little more kind of going for the broad mainstream audience. But I've actually liked these last two movies. And I know that that's unpopular to say. That's not the hip opinion. But they're cool movies and they got great special effects. The action scenes are cool. Yeah, the first scene of the movie, as neat as it is, the first action scene does sort of rip off one of the Fast Five or something like that, one of the Fast and Furious movies. But it's still a fun movie, and this one's relatively short. It's well under 2.5 hours, as opposed to the 3-hour behemoths that Gore Verbinski was delivering in his sequels. It's fun. I mean, there's nothing really truly remarkable about the special features. I mean, it looks great on a Blu-ray and it sounds great. It's a gorgeous movie and all the characters are having fun. I mean, you got a lot of people chewing the scenery. Yeah, you got the leads, the boy and the girl, but you got Jack Sparrow played by, you know, Johnny Depp, and he does a great job. And Javier Bardem as the bad guy. He's basically chewing it just as much as Johnny Depp and Jeffrey Rush, who shows up again as Barbossa. It's just a fun movie. It's a lark. It's nothing to be taken seriously, but I like these movies, and they're making tons and tons of money overseas, so they're going to keep making them as long as Johnny Depp does them, you know, and he needs to pay off dog fees in Cuba. Oh, and also a huge divorce settlement. Let's hope that Johnny Depp gets divorced a couple more times so that we can see more of these movies. So I'm going to have to say Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales rocks for me.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Other releases this week include Transformers The Last Knight, which you should avoid, 47 Meters Down, Taken Season 1, and Shameless Season 7. That is it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about one of my most anticipated movies of the year, Blade Runner 2049. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.